You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. If this is your first time hearing about Exodus and their brand of trail cameras, all of their cameras are backed by a 5-year no BS warranty and even includes 5-year theft and damage coverage. They simply have the best trail camera warranty in the industry and have the customer service to support everything that you need, right? So currently in the month of April, and that's only for April 2nd, and April 3rd, they are running a special. You can get 20% off the Exodus Trek and the Exodus Lift 2 by using the code April. You can also visit their website, exodusoutdoorgear.com, for more information. So go check out their cameras, and let's get into today's podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the greatest show on earth. My name's Dan Johnson. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And if you like hunting, you are in the right spot. Now, today, we're joined once again by my brother in hunting arms, Justin Czar of Bowhunter Die, bowhunting.com. Most of you guys already know who he is, but this is just a great BS session. We talk about some of his recent scouting trips to Iowa and Kentucky to prepare for the upcoming season. We talk about Jesse Smollett. We talk about kids and the wife. We talk about a whole bunch of different things, but the main focus today is about scouting and how he's preparing for some of these big trips to Iowa, to Kentucky, to try to take advantage of the preseason work. So that's what today's podcast is about. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. If you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, please do so. You can do that by going to wherever you download these podcasts and just hit the subscribe button. Please go to iTunes or wherever you download your podcast and leave a review. 5 stars would be great. Also, I'm excited to say that the Nine Finger Chronicles, in association with the Sportsman's Nation, will be producing its very first short film, and we're going to start that process here in the next couple weeks, and it's going to be about turkey hunting, and it's going to be about how turkey hunting is kind of my family's, it's like a new family tradition that we have. It's about going to be about me and my wife and how we go to my parents for turkey camp every year. And it's just a really overall good time. So I figured, what the hell? Why not? Why don't I turn that into a short film? And we're going to start recording on that in the next couple weeks. So for all of you who have yet to subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel, please go do that, because that's one of the platforms where it will be released on. And I will be providing more information on that before the time comes, so just keep an eye out for that. Other than that, man, hunter safety systems, right? I end every show by saying, wear your damn safety harness, and I truly mean that. And I know that I've had a whole bunch of close calls over the years. I know when I was young and dumb, I didn't used to wear a tree harness. And I had a couple close calls where I didn't fall 10 feet, but I fell like 5 feet. And it was enough to scare a guy, right? So from that point on, I picked up a safety harness and I started using one on a religious basis. And every year you hear these stories about people who fall and then they become paralyzed or worse yet, dead. And it's almost selfish not to wear a safety harness, especially if you're a family man, right? If you, man or woman, right? If you have kids at home or a wife at home, and you go out and you don't hunt with a safety harness, it's like you're rolling the dice, right? So if you're going to be in a tree stand, man, you got to wear a safety harness. And Hunter Safety System has a variety of options to choose from, whether you like a vest, whether you like a straight up harness. They have some specifically designed for hanging tree stands, right? Preparing your tree stand setups with big pockets and stuff. So if you don't have a trail or a safety harness yet, you need to go buy one. And Hunter Safety Systems offers a variety of really high quality harnesses, and I think you need to take advantage of that. So go to their website and check out their products and buy one. It's that simple. So we've done just about everything we need to do in this intro. We're going to get right into today's podcast with my man, Justin Czar. You don't really need an introduction, so I'm just going to say, Justin Czar, how the hell are you?
I was doing really good today, Dan, until you told me that Jussie Smollett was in Mighty Ducks. And that just threw me into a tailspin from which I may not recover for the rest of my day.
Oh, man. It's going to lead down that Google rabbit hole.
What I'm Googling right now.
You're not
like my search is loading right now. It's being really slow because the government's trying to suppress the information, but I am searching it.
You're already checked out of this podcast. It's just like one sentence in and it's done.
It's all over. Everyone else is going to do the same thing now, though.
Right.
Because they're going to be like, what?
Jussie Smollett was in Mighty Ducks? I'm not sure if it was.
He was. I'm looking at it right here. He was in Mighty Ducks.
Dude, I love that movie growing up.
I know. What a great movie.
The Flying V, the Knuckle Puck.
What a tragedy.
Yeah. I don't even want to get into it.
Dude, imagine if you lived here in Illinois. I'm in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah.
So it's even bigger news here than it is in the rest of the country.
Right. Is Chicago where he got pretend jumped, right?
Correct.
Okay, cool.
At 2 a.m.
At 2 a.m.
By some dudes wearing MAGA hats, which I just from day one, I was like, man, there's just not a lot of those guys running around Chicago at 2 a.m.
But right.
Hey, you never know.
You never know. okay. So we're going to talk today a little bit about scouting,
yes.
Some recent scouting trips you've been on. But, you know, we got to BS because I got some other things I want to ask you before we hop into that. And
okay.
Because I know you have a different, a different style of music than what I listen to, because I think you like the hard stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're into a lot of like Luke Bryan and Florida Georgia Line, if I remember.
You son of a bitch. No, I do not.
No, I am mistaken.
But
I grew up, I was a bit of a metalhead kid. I'm into some harder music than is traditionally associated with the outdoors community. Sure, you could say that.
Yeah. Well, I remember back in the day when if it wasn't like this classic country being played on the television shows, it was that, all right, everybody, we're here. We just pulled into the outfitter and we're going to get after it today. And it was brah, brah, like, and then it was just like the music didn't reflect what was happening on the screen. And it just, you know, this sweet guitar solos and heavy metal music, like let's get
sure, but,
up
it,
for the
but
hunt.
It was like it was all like stock,
yeah,
like
stock
music, yeah. I get it,
yeah. So, the reason I asked this question is because someone once a year somebody brings it up, and it was a handful of years ago. I don't even know what source printed this, but I said that I don't listen or I don't like the song Fredbear by Ted Nugent.
The Nuge?
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, because everybody's like, when you ask, hey, what do you like to listen to when you're on your way to the tree stand? And everybody's like, oh, dude, I listen to Fredbear, man. You know, that's the song. You know, that represents the hunting industry. And I said, I don't like that song. And, man.
Someone wrote an article about it. You may be an anti-hunter at heart.
Man.
You just haven't discovered yourself yet.
That's something to think
about.
You're
confused.
An anti-hunter who hasn't found out he's an anti-hunter yet, but he's still a hunter.
That's a great premise for a new web series we're going to launch on YouTube.
Right. Where it's just a guy who falls out of love with hunting and then just picks up something like growing vegetables.
Golf. I've always felt like golf would be a suitable alternative to my hunting addiction.
I don't know, man.
It's probably just as expensive.
Right.
Right. but you are encouraged in many cases to drink while you are doing it, because there's people that come deliver alcohol to you while you're doing it.
Yes.
Which is a far cry from hunting.
Yeah.
So I felt like it's got that going for it. People travel to warm places to golf as opposed to hunting, where we go cold places and then freeze our asses off.
Right.
You have, it's pay to play, but so is hunting nowadays for the most part, right? You've got the public golf courses, which are generally not as good as the swanky private ones.
High pressure.
So, yeah, so it's very similar in those two regards. So I feel like it's an easy slide from hunting, just sell all my hunting crap and start golfing. Go with my bros like during spring break to somewhere warm,
right?
Drink beer and golf. Kind of sounds like fun. So when all the deer are dead of CWD and EHD, yep, and or hunting has been outlawed, I'm thinking golf is my next thing. Or I've always said building tiny ships inside of glass bottles would be something I would be interested in learning how to do as well.
Hey, man, that takes some time and some patience.
Yeah. But I mean, so does sitting in a tree waiting for a stupid deer to walk by you so you can shoot it.
Right.
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 So maybe there's the solitude that I enjoy about hunting I could find in tiny shipbuilding.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck with whatever you decide to do after.
Well, for now, I'm sticking with killing animals. That's what I'm. But, you know, just in case that ever comes to an end, you got to have a plan backup. B, Dan, backup plan.
Backup plan. Well, I got to ask you this. Do you ever have like really dumb arguments with your wife?
Isn't every argument with your wife kind of fall into that category for the most part?
Yeah. Yeah. I found, what was it, last week. I don't know if it was the kids are the source of all my problems pretty much in my life. You know, I love them, but like, man, when they're all three of them are functioning high on all cylinders, our house gets stressful. And I like me when that happens, then my wife and our fuses get really short, and not only with the kids, but with each other. And sure. I just remember like placing a glass of water in a different place. So what I did was I moved a glass of water, and so my youngest son didn't knock it over. And my wife was like, hey, where's my glass of water? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know where your glass of water is. And it was.
How the hell would I know?
Yeah, how the hell would I know? It was literally 6 inches from where I moved it. But I don't, like, I was so stressed out, I don't remember moving it. And then we had an argument about a glass of water.
Yeah. That's how it happens, buddy.
Yeah.
That's how it all happens. Kids is the next level of stress.
Yeah.
See, my wife and I are very different people. She's got the very short fuse, and I think probably it's because she's with the kids all day long.
Yeah.
Like trapped in that hell. So like yesterday morning, I needed to do the weekend Costco run.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to take the kids with. And she looked at me and she's like, you're going to do what? I was like, I'll just take them all. I don't care. Like I'm fearless. Let's go. Everybody in the car. Get your shoes on. Let's go. And my wife looked at me like I was out of my mind bringing three kids to Costco on a Sunday by myself.
Did she try to
stop you? No, hell no. Yeah. I was partially doing it because I understand that I'm a selfish human being.
Yes.
And there's a lot of times when I just decide like, hey, I'm going to Iowa this weekend to go scouting for deer. See you later. So when I am home, I try to make up for it a little bit. So yeah. I packed them all in. We went to Costco. Went to Home Depot, then we went to Red Robin and ate lunch, and then came home and did all of that with little to no problems. My wife was amazed.
Wow.
But I always tell my wife that the kids feed off of your behavior and your emotions. If you can manage to like keep your cool a little bit more, things are a little bit more stable. My wife is incapable of keeping her cool the minute a child like looks in the wrong direction or strays too far from the shopping cart in the store or whatever. She is like, her fuse is not even short. It's just non-existent. And I feel like that just feeds into their insanity.
Right.
You gotta maintain your cool and then everything's good, man.
So as most of the people on this podcast or follow me on social and you know, I recently lost my full-time job. Right.
Right.
And so now we've pulled the kids out of daycare and we are officially co-parenting throughout the entire day, right? Except Tuesdays and Thursdays, where my daughter still at this time is still going to kindergarten, and on Mondays and Wednesdays my son goes to preschool for half the day, right? But on Tuesdays and Thursdays I get both youngest boys at home the entire day, right? So I get no work done. And and then after that, you know, my daughter comes home after school, so then I have all three of them. And I never used to think, you know, my wife would call me, she's like, I'm totally stressed out. I'm just like, come on, how bad can it be having the kids there? You know, like, what's wrong? Like, you're overreacting. Well, now that I've had a taste of that medicine, so to speak, I completely get where she's going, you know, where, because, you know, once I was getting like once a week, twice a week, these phone calls, like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do it anymore. And now I'm just like, holy shit. This is absolute craziness, absolute chaos every moment, you know?
Yes.
And unless you have them controlled, you know, in restraints, there is no controlling it.
Dude, just have them take naps until they're 10.
Yeah.
Well, that's the 3-hour naps every day until you're 10 and you're old enough to cut the lawn and do things with your parents.
Yeah.
That's our philosophy.
Absolutely. Don't you wish you could take naps throughout the day sometimes?
Oh, dude, I'll be honest with you. I snuck in about a 45-minute nap yesterday afternoon, and it was amazing. My two littlest ones were sleeping, and my oldest one was watching YouTube videos, and I kind of just passed out on the couch, and I woke up, and I was like, what the hell happened? Nice. Holy shit, I slept for 45 minutes. It was amazing. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I built a treehouse yesterday. Well, started it.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like fun. I picked up dog crap in my backyard as well.
So we both did yesterday. Something productive.
Yeah. It was the most productive thing I did other than going to Costco yesterday.
Yeah. Cool, man. So sounds like you got a big year coming up, man, for especially this fall. You're yes. Drawing Iowa.
Yeah. Well, but even before that, like Todd actually pulled me aside one day, Todd Graff, and he was like, hey, like you're going a little crazy this fall. So just do me a favor. Try not to get divorced. And I was like, well, I've already prepared my wife for this. A lot of this stuff isn't quite as bad as everybody wants to make it out to be. But essentially, I'm going to start my season September 1st in Kentucky. And okay. We're going to hunt. I'm going to hunt there for about 4 days. And then we come home. And then Wisconsin season opens like in the middle of September. I forget the exact day this year, what it is. But I plan on hunting Wisconsin for those first couple weekends prior to Illinois opening in October. Now, fortunately, the Wisconsin hunts, I'm only from my house to one of the pieces of public that I hunt in Wisconsin's like maybe 40-minute drive.
Right.
So it's relatively close. We're not talking overnight trips or anything along those lines. So we got Wisconsin for a couple weekends, and then Illinois opens.
Oh, that was unprofessional. I have my phone off of.
And I expect a very high level of professionalism on this podcast. Damn it, Dan.
And the best part is I'm so unprofessional that right now I'm shutting my phone off and I'm going to throw it over there so I don't am bothered by it. And I will continue this podcast now without editing that out.
All right, good. So October comes and that's Illinois opens.
Right.
So my plan is to hunt early season Illinois, mostly local to home, maybe take my son out on a couple trips to our lease and try to kill a doe. And then basically from the last week of October through the middle of November, I'm going to pretty much just focus on Iowa, and I'm going to abandon all of my Illinois spots pretty much during the rut. And then the big one comes. I actually go to Wyoming from like November 16th, I think, to the 20th. And that's kind of my last hurrah for the year, because once I get home from that, if my wife hasn't smothered me in my sleep by that point, then it'll be pretty much just local hunting in Illinois from there on through the rest of the year. So I got a solid 2 months of like a lot. I think I got like 5 states, if I count right. I think Kentucky, Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, Wyoming. Yeah, 5 states. So it's going to be a hell of a fall.
Well, typically you go to Kansas. So that's out of the picture this year?
Well, I did Kansas once, like 2 years ago, and it sucked horribly, even though it was just kind of bad timing and bad weather, and we didn't really know what we were doing. So Kansas didn't suck. We just sucked, me and my buddy Matt, when we went. But last year, I only did Illinois and Wisconsin. Well, I went to Wyoming last year, but that was like in August. So I don't even consider it a part of the hunting season because I hunted in Wyoming, and then I came home, and then all of September really didn't do much until October started. So when they're that spaced out, I don't even consider that part of the hunting season. At least that's how I justify it to my wife. Well, that was in August, and now we're in October. Two totally different things.
Right. All right. So what are you doing in Wyoming?
We're actually going to go whitetail hunting during the rut out there.
Yeah. I talked to Dustin. He told me that it's crazy out there just because the numbers alone.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. We went out last year antelope hunting, and I mean, this is no joke. I mean, you're sitting in a blind, and I was hunting hay fields, and you could look out at any point in time during the day and just see deer in every possible direction. They never leave the hay fields. There's just a tremendous amount of whitetails out there, and they're kind of concentrated because food sources are limited. It's either A, come, you know, eat in these hay fields, or B, go starve to death on the tundra. Yeah. You know, so all of the deer are in these river bottoms and these hayfields, so they're very concentrated in there. And yeah, Dustin had an amazing bunch of hunts last year, so we decided we wanted to go to Wyoming to shoot a whitetail, and I just didn't want to do the early September in a ground blind on a hayfield type thing. Like, we want to get in tree stands, rattle, put out decoys, and do that whole thing and see what sort of footage we can drum up out of that trip. So it's going to be me, Todd Graff, our buddy Scott Bakken from HHA Sports is coming, and then another one of our friends, Jerry, who works at Pine Ridge Archery. He's going to come out with us. So it's going to be the four of us, meet Dustin out there, and go try to slam a few whitetails before Thanksgiving.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Cool.
So that's like the easiest hunt, because that's like a show up and just go hunt type thing.
Right.
The rest of these are go drive, you know, to wherever the hell, middle of nowhere, and go try to find an animal to kill on public land.
Yeah.
So the other adventures are going to be a little bit more intense than the Wyoming one.
Right. So Kentucky and Iowa are going to be your public lands. All right.
Well,
so,
and Wisconsin too. But that one I take probably a little bit less seriously, because if I just shoot a doe or something up there, I'll be happy.
Gotcha.
So Kentucky and Iowa are the actual like travel, stay overnight, try to kill a deer type of trips.
Right. And you're going to try that first week in September in Kentucky, right? Is that just a 1 week trip?
Yep. That's just a 4 day trip is all we're going to do down there. We went down, my buddy Matt and I, who is the same guy that went to Kansas with me, him and I went down there 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago. And we spent 2 days walking some public ground down there, and I don't know, man. I mean, we saw a deer sign. We picked up some sheds. You know, the one thing that I will say is the particular area that we walked was, I think it was like 5,600 acres, this management area that we walked. And it is legitimately managed for wildlife in that they plant crops, they leave standing crops, they plant cover crops that they use for the wildlife. They actually plant food plots. Like, we found a legitimate turnip food plot that was planted just for deer on the public land, which, as a guy from Illinois, that's like mind boggling,
right?
You know, how nicely taken care of everything was. Saw a ton of deer, ran into a couple guys from Louisiana who were up doing the same thing we were doing. They were scouting. So we exchanged phone numbers with them. They're going to be coming back, I think, the same time that we are in September. So we said, hey, you know, let's communicate while we're all here. That way, if anybody shoots anything or needs help or whatever, you know, we all have each other's information. And they were super cool dudes. It's funny. They came walking up out of this field. We were sitting at the truck just getting a drink of water. They came walking up out of this field, had a couple shed antlers. And within 30 seconds of talking to the one guy, he stops and he looks at me and he goes, I know you. He goes, I just listened to a podcast with you the other day. He was probably listening to your podcast, would be my guess.
Yeah.
I didn't ask him which one, but it's not like I'm on a ton of them. It was either you or Working Class Bowhunter, one of the two. It's like, I was just listening to a podcast with you on it the other day.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit, I need to put on like a fake mustache and sunglasses when I'm out here.
Well, but no, Justin's ours hunting that property, then it's got to be good.
Yeah, right. I don't know any better than anybody else. So we literally just drove to Kentucky. We're like, this one looks good. Let's go here.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Is it because it's close?
Yeah, partially. We wanted to stick to the western side of Kentucky. Yeah, partially because it is closer.
Yeah.
There's a couple management areas over there we found out are like a limited quota or a draw only from mid-October on. And some of them are bow hunting only. So that was kind of attractive to us. But if you were to go the first month and a half, like September 1st through the middle of October, there is no quota. You just buy a license and anybody can go. But once the real traffic starts to pick up, right, when everybody wants to come hunt that late October and November time, they turn it into a special draw unit.
Right.
Because I think they were just getting too many idiots like us from out of state coming down there. So in order to ease the pressure a little bit, they put a couple of these areas into quota only. And since they're bow only, they just, you know, that just seemed like an attractive option for us. So I will say that the difference in scouting Kentucky versus what I was just doing in Iowa is a lot different just because of the time of year that I'm planning on hunting. You know, being that first week in September, like we're primarily just focused on food sources, early season green food sources. Where's that green going to be? Where can we try to get away from people if there's any people in here, and maybe try to find a bachelor group of bucks or something to get on? So we're primarily scouting food sources, where my Iowa trip was mostly bedding areas and travel corridors and not so much food.
Gotcha.
So just a different type of scouting because it was just different times of the year when I'm planning on being there.
Gotcha. All right. So I want to start with Kentucky.
Yeah.
So first off, what did you do to identify this specific location? Was it specifically like a Google Maps type of thing, or did you hear from other people who have hunted Kentucky that this is where you want to go?
It was pretty much just a Google Maps, Kentucky, you know, DNR website, figuring out where the public land is, how big it is, how far away from home it is. You know, for us was a big thing, only having a limited amount of time to get down there and hunt. We didn't want to have to drive any further than we needed to. And then as fate would have it, a guy messaged me on Facebook a couple of weeks ago and he said, "Hey, when are you guys going to come down to Kentucky and hunt public ground?" And, well, sometimes I respond to people's Facebook messages, sometimes I don't. And in this case, I was like, "Hey, actually we're planning on coming down there in a couple weeks to scout, you know?" And he's like, "Oh, where are you guys thinking about going?" And I told him, and turns out that he only lived like an hour away. And so he offered to come meet us over at this place because he had shed hunted it before and actually had hunted it. So this guy by the name of Cody came and met us over there. And thankfully, he didn't kill us and turn our heads into ashtrays like people are always worried about, like some random internet dudes. Like, "Yeah, I'll meet you over in the middle of the woods in Kentucky somewhere." I'm like, "This is where we die, Matt. Like, it was good knowing you." But no, Cody was freaking awesome, dude. He is a legit, super nice, down to earth, like took us around, showed us everything that he knew, areas that he had walked where he'd found sheds before. And dude, he hung out with us for 2 days down there. We walked, I don't know how many miles we walked, and he came right along with us and picked up some sheds, and it was super cool. You know, very thankful to him for doing that with us. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of, like I said, just a combination of how far away is it? How big is it? What does the terrain look like? And then, like I said, we started looking up, like, okay, this is a special draw area. It's bow only, but we can get in there during early season. Did a lot of, you know, just kind of Google searching and talking to a few people who said, like, there's not a lot of pressure down here in September because it's so damn hot still. Like, people just aren't really hunting much.
Yeah.
And again, most of the guys coming from out of state want to come do those rut hunts. So if you can get there prior to a rut hunt, you know, there might not be as many pressure. And I think we all know that deer are a little bit more patternable early in the season.
Yep.
So we wanted to look for a place with a decent amount of agriculture on it. And we certainly found it. I mean, there was standing beans and standing corn all over this place where we walked.
Yeah.
And we talked to Cody and we're like, "Is this normal? Like, were these fields flooded? Why didn't they get picked?" And he's like, "No, they leave food every year." I was like, holy shit, they definitely don't do that in Illinois or any of the Wisconsin spots I've ever been on. Yeah. So yeah, that was pretty cool. So we found a couple areas. You know, fortunately, Cody's going to go down during the summer and maybe glass some fields, maybe even run a couple trail cameras for us, kind of act as our quasi guide before we get back down there. So hopefully we've got a little bit of a head start going into it, and maybe one of the two of us can try to get a shot at something. So yeah. I guess we'll see what happens.
So you've mentioned the terrain in Kentucky just a little bit, but when you got out of the truck and said, let's start scouting, break that down for us. What were you looking for as far as, and because you mentioned that two different hunts, one in Iowa during the rut, one in Kentucky during the early part of the season, you know, obviously September 1st. What were you looking for in Kentucky as far as terrain features, bedding, all that stuff?
Yeah, well, we were mostly concerned, like I said, with food. But then our, you know, from there, I was like, okay, we found a field, right? But where the hell do you hunt on this field? And if it's not going to be the field edge, where can we get back off of this field a little bit where we think we're going to have an opportunity to shoot a deer? So from there, we start looking at, you know, bedding areas. And I think a lot of people have talked about this at kind of ad nauseum at this point, but I mean, deer definitely do prefer to bed higher than they do to bed lower, at least in my experience. And I know a lot of others have seen the same thing. So we're kind of looking for like, okay, where are the hills that we think the deer are going to be bedding on, where they're going to be feeding, you know, early season, we're anticipating probably some southerly winds. So we are trying to just locate, okay, if we think they're bedding here and that's the food source there, you know, and we're going to have hopefully some south winds. Like, is this an area that we can even consider hunting under those conditions? And if it's not, we move on to the next and to the next and to the next to try to find these areas. There was a ton of water, a lot of ponds on this place. It looked like they were man-made. So we didn't really focus on water too much just because there was so much of it all over the place. The other thing that we focused on, because it is pretty hilly terrain on that western side of Kentucky, nothing like what I just encountered in Iowa, but I mean, pretty hilly. So we tried to focus on, I guess it would be the western edges of the fields that we believe are going to be shaded first. Again, in my experience during those early season hunts, when it's really warm, the deer tend to come out in the shady areas of the fields first. So they're not getting just absolutely hammered by the sun. So again, we looked for a combination of things like, okay, this is a cornfield now. It appears that they rotate beans, corn every year down there. So we were, again, assuming that, okay, this is probably going to be a bean field. Deer are going to be bedding over there. This is what the wind's probably going to be doing. And then we tried to identify a couple areas that we were interested in confirming all of those suspicions once we get back down there in the last couple days of August before the season starts.
Gotcha. So basically it sounds like you were running different scenarios in your head saying, if this is the case, then the deer should be doing this.
Sure.
Did you find any type of sign, like old scrapes or rubs or like heavily used trails that backed up those suspicions?
We did, but I've always said the one thing that I am leery about when I'm scouting this time of year is the sign is so heavily concentrated around late season food sources that it can be misleading. So when that snow melts and the ground starts to thaw out, like in this case, right, in this particular property in particular, you know, there was standing corn and standing beans all over the place. So as you can imagine, like those spots were just absolutely hammered with sign. You know, trails and yeah, there's going to be rubs and scrapes and stuff, but the concentration around those food sources, which the deer probably started using, I don't know, let's say in late November, probably is when they really started hitting those. It can be deceiving and people can think like, oh man, this is the spot I want to be. And then you come back the next year and maybe the food has shifted or it's early season now. And, the deer aren't as concentrated in those food sources as they were when all that previous sign was left. So I'm always a little bit leery about trails and tracks. I'm looking more for scrapes and rubs. But again, like in this case, when we get down there, like it's possible you could still shoot a velvet buck. Yeah. You know, there's a few probably still hanging on into those first couple days of September. They're bachelored up at that point. So in my opinion, it's just about finding like what's the hot food source that they're on. There hasn't really been any pressure, hopefully, by that point. So hopefully they're still coming out in daylight to those fields. If we find that they're not, then we may have to back off the field a little bit and try to get them before they get into the field. But, man, that can be tough early season, especially with the thick canopy, getting in there and being able to get a shot at something before daylight runs out. Right. So we're kind of banking on food sources. I will say that we found a couple really cool kind of like food plots, I guess, almost like little, I don't know if they were rye or oats or hay or what they had planted, but there's these little fields that are just in the middle of these giant stands of timber. And they're some of them are 50 yards wide by 100 yards long, and they're all green planted, you know, grasses in there. So we looked at a couple of those and we're like, man, this would be a killer little spot for a buck to come out and feel comfortable feeding in during daylight. It's not a giant open field that can be seen from a long ways off. So I don't know. We're going to go back. I think their season starts on a Sunday. We're going to go down on Saturday. We're going to split up and we're going to each glass three different areas, myself, Matt, and Cody, the night before the season starts. Hopefully we can locate some deer coming out into some of these fields and then try to get set up on one of them. That's kind of the plan.
Yep. Now, you know, you look at a piece of property and say, you go and find all these really kick-ass spots like that rye field or whatever you were talking about. We all know that other people hunt this property. So other than, you know, a handful, right, did you also go in and have this conversation with yourselves about we need to find backup plans too, right?
Sure.
Like go to point, you know, like plan A, B, C, D, and so on down the line?
Yeah, we definitely did that. Fortunately, we walked enough spots in those couple of days we were there. I think we found enough areas where if we run into people, we'll be able to get away from them. I'll be honest, I'm not anticipating running into a lot of people that time of year. And if we do, I mean, I've got enough pins dropped in my Onyx maps where I'll be able to just go to plan B, C, D, E, and F down the line.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. It's going to be, you know, opening days on a Sunday. That Monday is Labor Day. So I don't know how many people are going to be hunting on Labor Day. I know my wife's pissed that I'm not going to be there. Because normally we go to Michigan or do something on that weekend with the kids. So I'm kind of hoping that there's a lot of people getting that last summer vacation in instead of hunting. And then we're going to hunt Tuesday, Wednesday, which in my experience from the limited amount of public hunting that I've done the last couple of years, if you go during the weekday, it's an entirely different world than it is on the weekend.
Yeah.
So I got to imagine that there's not going to be much, if any, pressure. And it's 5,600 acres. If I can't find somewhere to go and get away from people, then I just suck.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So with it being an early season hunt, right? We know that deer tend not to move in hot weather. So are you prepared to like dive in deep, trying to get close to where they bed? If it's hot out and let's say there's not a front that coincides with your trip, you know, because that time of year deer are still pretty nocturnal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Are they, I mean, we're talking late August, first week of September. I feel like they move quite a bit out to feed, even if it is warm out. But to answer your question, yeah. I mean, if we need to, if we're not seeing anything and we need to go in deep to a few places, we're going to do that. I mean, we've only got 4 days to hunt, so we're planning on hunting mornings as well. But what we've done is we've kind of picked our sections like way back in the timber type of thing for the morning hunts. That's way far away from anything that we plan on hunting in the evenings. So if we muck it up, we don't really care too much. Gotcha. But we figured, screw it, what are we gonna do? We're here for 4 days, we may as well hunt, even if it's only for the first 2 hours of light on those mornings, because what else are we gonna do, sleep? Like, yeah, we may as well just go. And I mean, we're not coming back the rest of the year. So if we bump a deer somewhere, like, sorry, everyone else, we really don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you gotta be aggressive at that point.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. We got 4 days to try to kill a deer. So do what you gotta do. But yeah, I mean, I think we're prepared. We've picked a few areas that I felt like were decent bedding areas, pretty far from food sources. So that would be my plan, is to get into one of those spots, you know, on a morning and see what happens.
So other than that rye field, did you locate any places that you're pretty fired up to hunt?
Well, if everything holds true and some of these corn fields turn into what I believe are going to be bean fields, yeah, we found a couple couple spots. You know, the trick is, like, one of them's a freaking huge field. I don't know how many acres it is, but it's huge, and it's a bunch of rolling hills and some ponds on either side. The trick is going to be, you know, trying to figure out where these deer are coming into those fields. Like, what part of the field are they actually using? Just seeing them is one thing, but actually trying to get close enough to kill one with a bow is a whole nother story. You know, and we all know these deer love to come in those fields and then go out to 50, 60, 80 yards and feed out there, so they're not standing right next to the edge of the woods. So you kind of got to be somewhat close to where they're going to be coming out. So that's where some of the glassing of those fields, I think, is going to help. The deer, in my experience, are pretty predictable that time of year. They tend to do the same things kind of over and over for those, at least maybe those first couple days of the season, before they realize that, hey, there's a bunch of dudes trying to kill me. I need to stop doing this.
Right.
So we're hoping to capitalize on that. But yeah, just crossing our fingers between the three of us, between some of Cody's scouting before season, we can manage to see something and then move in on it within the first couple of days. That's gotcha. Really the plan.
All right. Now, realistically, what are your goals between, let's say, between three people that are going there? You thinking, or is your goal for everybody to kill, or do you think, you know, hey, you know, maybe two of us or one of us will, or what are you looking for personally?
I think the goal is always that we all kill deer, but I think the reality is if even one of us killed a deer in that time frame, I think we would all be pretty happy with that. I mean, let's face it, we're going into a spot that I walked it for a day and a half, 6 months before I hunted it, you know?
Right.
So we're really getting into uncharted territory. And if we get lucky, awesome. To be honest with you, my goal is just to go have fun. I mean, if we can manage to see some good deer and put ourselves like in the hunt where we're like, okay, there's a deer that we want to shoot. Let's move in on them or let's do something here. I think I would be happy with that. If somebody kills a deer, I would be elated. But I mean, expectations are not super high for this. It's more or less, let's go do something new. Let's do something early season when it's warm and before all of our other seasons have opened. And you only live once, right? We may as well go do this now while we can.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's awesome. Are you thinking like a 2-year-old, 3-year-old? I mean,
I'd like to say a 3-year-old. I mean, you never know if a nice 2-year-old comes out. I don't know. I might shoot it.
Yeah.
Depends on how I'm feeling that day. If he walks out and I feel like, hell yeah, this is something I want to shoot, then I'm going to shoot it. You know, I say 3-year-old and up, but it's not a hard line by any stretch of the imagination. I would say, I think we picked up 8 sheds between us in that little bit of walking we did. And I think half of them were off of like what I would say are probably 100-inch 2-year-old deer, like 100-inch 8-pointers that I got to imagine are going to be 120-inch maybe 3-pointers, 120 to 130-inch 3-year-olds, I mean.
Yeah.
So I'd be super happy with that deer. Right. Obviously, if I can get something bigger, great. But if not, I think the reality is we got 4 days and we came here to kill, not just look at them. So right. You never know.
Yeah, that's something I think about too, is if I go in, you know, it's not like you can do a ton of scouting or you have any historical data on this piece of property, right? So if I was in your shoes, I go into this spot and it's going to be run and gun. It's going to be a complete run and gun type hunt. I would be thrilled if I could go in, especially in a morning hunt, pitch black dark, set up and have an encounter with a respectable deer. Let's just say a 120-inch 2-year-old or 100-inch 2-year-old, whatever. There's a good chance I would kill that animal just from the strategy portion alone.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You got to have different standards depending on what you're doing. Like you said, if you drive your ass to another state and walk in the dark and hang a tree stand and manage to get close enough to a deer in September to kill it, like that's an accomplishment in and of itself. Doesn't matter if it's a 2-year-old buck or a 5-year-old deer, like that's a hard thing to do. So yeah, I mean, we just have to plan our limitations accordingly.
Yep, absolutely. Now, you know, this is where dreams are made of, right? You're hunting Iowa, right? There is a Boone and Crockett deer that's 170 inches in every, I'm going to say every farm, maybe multiple. booners in every farm. So you should at least kill one of them.
I've only got one. I'll only have one tag, so allowed legally.
But what I'm saying is, it's 100% guaranteed.
Everywhere. Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Or my money back, I think. Yes, Iowa DNR like is listening.
Yep, something like that. All right, so Iowa, right?
Yes.
Now, that's a rut hunt. Talk to me a little bit about the Iowa piece that you scouted and what part of the state, eastern part of the state?
Yeah, so I've got three preference points that I've been sitting on for years. I looked at all the draw results from the last couple of years, and if I want to get into those southern zones, I think it's 5 and 6. I got probably a 50-50 shot of drawing with 3 points. In the northern zones, I'm all but guaranteed. I think everybody with 3 points drew last year. And I think they're increasing tag allocation a little bit this year for that northeastern part of the state. So I'm planning on hunting zone 9, I believe is what it is.
Gotcha.
Which basically borders Wisconsin and Minnesota. So it's northeastern Iowa. And there's a couple different reasons that I decided to do that. Number one, I'm guaranteed that I'm going to draw a tag there this year with only 3 points. Number two, it is, again, closer of a drive. Not necessarily, like, if I left my house to drive from my home to southeastern Iowa is about the same as going from my home to northeastern Iowa. It's about 3.5 to 4 hours. But what it is significantly closer to is my lease in Illinois, which is in northwestern Illinois. And I got a buddy that owns some property out there that I could stay at. It's only about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes from my lease in Illinois to get up to this public that I'm going to hunt in Iowa. So my thought process there was that it makes life a little bit easier if I want to either bounce back and forth between the two, or if I want to do like a Sunday morning hunt, let's say in Iowa, let's say I don't shoot anything. I want to do that hour drive back to Illinois, hunt my lease maybe in Illinois or hunt with one of my buddies in Illinois, and then only have an hour and a half to 2 hour drive home at the end of the night. It makes things a lot easier. So that was part of my reasoning. So I decided northeast Iowa was where I was going to go. So I actually went this past weekend. Same thing. I looked at all the freaking public that I could possibly look at on Topo Maps and Google Earth and Onyx and everything else to try to get a feel for where I wanted to go. I settled on one that was about, I think it's about 2,000 acres in total, and decided that I'm going to put all my eggs in that basket because, I mean, on that much land, there's got to be a buck somewhere that I would be happy shooting with my Iowa tag. It might not be a booner, but I'm sure there's a nice one. I'm sure there's a nice one in there somewhere that I would be happy to wrap my tag around. So I decided this is it. I dropped a bunch of pins on my Onyx maps just based on topography alone. And then I went out there and visited the majority of those pins to try to confirm or deny my suspicions that these were good areas to hunt.
All right. So how good are you of looking at a topographic map, dropping a pin, going to investigate it? And, you know, what was your percentage of success saying, okay, well, hey, this is actually a good spot?
I'd say about 50-50.
50-50.
Yeah. And the reason for that is, I'm looking at late October into November. So I'm looking for late October hunts. I'm trying to look for buck bedding because I don't think they're cruising a ton at that point in time. And I know this is like a hot topic of like buck bedding areas and getting close to them. But realistically, end of October, again, they're not traveling super far at that point. So I'm looking for, you know, there's a ton of topography in northeast Iowa. I don't know if you've been up there, but holy shit.
It's hilly.
It is like massive bluff country. I knew what I was getting into, but I never walked any of that stuff before. I mean, there's legitimately stuff that's so steep you can't walk up or down it in that area. So I'm looking for, you know, points or I'm looking for saddles and ridges for kind of travel corridors and whatnot. So all the topography looked like what I thought it was going to look like when I got out there. But the biggest difference, the biggest thing that contributed to some of the areas not being as good as I thought they were going to be was there's a lot of really open timber. So I got up onto some of these points or some of these benches where I thought, oh, there's got to be a buck living up here. And I got up there and it was just open timber where you could see for hundreds of yards in every direction. there was no thick bedding cover. I have a feeling had there been bedding cover there, there probably would have been deer bedding in it, but because the cover wasn't there, the topography was right, but the cover wasn't. So I kind of just checked a few of those spots, like, okay, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. But a few of the areas that I were hoping were going to be good turned out to be freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Just like I thought they were going to be. The hard part is going to be getting in. And then if I shoot a deer, getting it out again, because, one of the spots is like a little over 2 miles from the parking area. And that's a hell of a hike with 50 pounds of gear on your back.
Yeah.
And then a hell of a drag out if you do shoot something. But at that point, I figure if I shoot something that far in, it's going to be damn well worth the drag out. So it might take me a day, but I won't care at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I know where you're going, or I know the area of the state. My family has been going up to, there's some national, or not national, but like state parks up there that I used to go to all the time when we were a kid. And it's one of the best counties to hunt in the entire state of Iowa.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a ton of deer sign. I saw a lot of scrapes. Rubs were a little bit further and fewer between, which I'm not overly concerned about. I've hunted plenty of areas before that just weren't torn up, like shredded with buck sign, and there was plenty of bucks on them.
Yeah.
You know, my lease here in Illinois is a prime example. I had, I don't know, I'd say half dozen deer out there that I would shoot last year. And granted, it's only a little over 100 acres, but there's only one little piece of that farm that's shredded with buck sign. The rest of it, I mean, there's rubs here and rubs there. So I don't always take rubs per se as like the gospel of whether or not there's bucks in the area or not. But I will say I found a couple areas that were highly concentrated areas of rubs in spots where I believe bucks were bedding. The one thing that I found to be kind of consistent, and I walked maybe, I think I walked 10 miles on Saturday in total. The one thing I found consistent is wherever I did find a good thicket that butted up to some of that open timber, that thicket was just trashed with rubs. Kind of like an inside edge, if you will, inside of the timber. So you've got, you know, real thick timber, let's say, to your right, and real open timber to your left. It seems like the line in between the thick and the open timber usually had a lot of good buck sign on it.
Yeah. You just described where I shot my buck this year.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's awesome, man. So, you know, are you excited to hunt Iowa this year?
You know, I am. I don't know if I should be more or less excited. I think I'll get more excited as the season gets closer. I was very excited to go scout, but my time is just kind of limited at this point, so I'm not going to be able to get back there at all really before the season starts. So I had a lot of excitement as I was driving out. I'm like, holy crap, here I go. I got a big plans. I'm going to walk all this stuff. And now that that's over, it's like, okay, great. I got to wait like 6 months before I can go back right. Or seven months now. So yeah, I think I'll be super pumped. My plan as of right now, and this is another point that I'll bring up about kind of post-season scouting, is you go into these areas, right? And yeah, I found a couple areas that had massive concentrations of big rubs, but I have no idea if that deer's still alive. That deer could have been killed. He could have died, you know, last year over the winter or whatever the case may be. So I'm not going back into those areas just being like, there was a bunch of rubs here last year. This is where I'm going to hunt. So my plan as of right now is to wait till probably mid-October, and I'll probably sacrifice a couple of my morning hunts in October where I don't really care anyways. And I'll probably go out there and do like some midday scouting, walk into a few of those areas and see if there's any buck sign starting to pop up. That way, if there is, I can say, okay, you know, suspicion confirmed. I'm going to come back here and hunt. Or if there's not, if they're just dead, I'm not going to waste my time on it. So my plan is to do that during a couple kind of middays in October. And then I'll probably just fly back to Illinois and hunt evenings in Illinois. My thought process there is I'll get to go do a little bit of like cushy hunting where I get to go sit on one of my little clover food plots in a tree stand that I hung in August. That's only 500 yards from the truck. And I'm going to enjoy that while I can, because the week leading into Halloween through up until I leave to go to Wyoming is pretty much going to be dedicated all to Iowa, which means a lot of hiking around with a lot of gear on my back and hanging stands and pulling stands and running and gunning. So I'm going to enjoy a little bit of cushy hunting in early October while I can.
Yeah. So typically, and this is just my experience with public land here in Iowa, there's only 2% of it, right? I think it's less than 2% of the state is public ground. That 2,000 acres that you are looking at, you said you're putting all your eggs into that basket. Do you feel that for the amount of time that you're dedicating, because it sounds like you're going to be there for just under 3 weeks?
I'm not going to be there consistently for that 3 weeks. I wish I was. I'm going to be there for maybe a total of 10 days, I would say, something like that. I'm going to try to do 4 or 5 days leading into Halloween. And then I'm going to be there probably for just a couple, 3 day weekends after that.
Gotcha. So are you dedicating in like a straight 7 days to that?
Nope. Okay. I think my son's birthday is that Saturday before Halloween. So I got to be home for his birthday party. So I'm going to hunt that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think Halloween's Thursday. I come home and then I'll probably go back Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, I mean, I've got like close to that. Yeah, probably.
Gotcha. Okay.
6 days.
6 days total.
Yeah. I mean, 6 or 7 days over like a 9 day span. Gotcha. With a couple trips back home in the middle.
Gotcha. Okay. So from a budget standpoint, when you're going to Kentucky and you're going to Iowa, are you guys camping? Are you staying in a hotel? What are you doing?
It depends. I mean, Kentucky, we found some nice little kind of cabins not too far away that we can rent that were relatively cheap. And there's two of us, so we split that cost. It's not too expensive. Last year, we camped in Wisconsin when we went up there and did public early in the year. And that was fun. It was warm. It was nice. For Iowa, I will probably grab a hotel somewhere or do an Airbnb. I found a few Airbnbs because being relatively close to the Mississippi River, it seems like there's a lot of Airbnbs out in that area of people like renting little cabins and stuff like along the river.
Yep.
So I've already looked into that and it's not super expensive. So yeah, I'll be doing that a few times. My buddies, hopefully one of my friends, I got two or three other people that are going to apply for Iowa tags this year. Most of them are sitting on 2 points. So not all of them are going to draw for this area, but I figure one or two of them will most likely draw, in which case we'll hunt together as much as we can and then split cost on, you know, hotels or Airbnbs or whatever we end up doing.
Nice. That's awesome, man. Well, good luck. Let's see.
Should be interesting to say the least. And my plan there is a couple of the areas that I found that I really liked are only, I'm going to say, a half mile to a mile from a parking area. Yeah. Now it's so damn hilly out there that I think every parking area I went to out there is at the bottom of a hill and you got to walk up to get almost anywhere you want to go.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that it weeds a few people out. I found 3 total tree stands in the 10 miles that I walked out there. Didn't see much sign of other hunters, to be frank with you. So I'm hoping I don't see a lot of other hunters. And again, I think that being there late October during the week, that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before Halloween, I don't think I'm going to see a lot of pressure. I know what it's like here in Illinois during the week. And like I said, it's a totally different ballgame when you're there during the week versus on a weekend. I've been to places in Illinois here where on a Friday night, I've got the entire place to myself. There's not another truck anywhere. And then come Saturday morning, there's 8 or 10 trucks out there.
Yeah.
So I'm really kind of putting my eggs in that late October basket of those couple days leading into Halloween. That's some of my favorite time to hunt traditionally. And being during the week, I really, really think I'm going to have an opportunity if I'm smart about what I'm doing.
Right. Is this Iowa property all timber? The reason I ask is because typically, if you can farm it, it's farmed. Or
sure.
Ag,
yeah,
or
there's some ag on it. There's some fields that are not farmed, I don't think. They're just like grass fields. I don't know, not really CRP, but they're like shorter grass. They may cut it and bale it or something, but it's predominantly timber. And I will say that the couple areas that I really liked that are a little bit closer to the truck are kind of like plans A and B. And then if all else fails, my 2.5 miles from the truck in the middle of the deep ass timber up some hills that'll damn near give you a heart attack, that's like my plan C. Those are my, if I got to come back in November on a weekend and I know there's going to be people there, that's the, I'm packing in 2 hours before daylight and staying the whole damn day.
Yeah.
In, I, you know, I found a killer saddle that's about 2.5 miles from the truck up a steep ass hill on one side, but it was just littered with big scrapes. I mean, like size of your truck hood scrapes. I don't know why we use the size of our truck hoods as the measurement tool for for scrape, like where that became the de facto standard.
I've never used it.
I know a lot of people do. They're like, dude, there's a scrape over here. It's big as your truck hood. And it's like, okay, that's kind of the standard by which we measure scrapes. But there's two of them right on top of this saddle. But man, it is a freaking ball busting hike to get in there.
Yeah.
So like I said, if I got to come back in November when I think the bucks are cruising a little bit more, and I want to try to maybe get away from some people and do some all day sits, that's going to be my spot. And hopefully nobody else is there.
Woo. Well, I tell you what, man, sounds like you have a full plate for this fall.
I do. It's going to be exciting. 5 states. Hopefully I can kill a deer with antlers somewhere between those 5 states.
Do you think your wife would actually divorce you?
No way, because then she'd really have to take care of the kids on her own. She'd have to go get a job or find some rich guy to take her in. And who wants to take in somebody that's got 3 little kids?
That's right.
Baggage. So, no, she's screwed. I'm screwed. We're stuck together. There's a Huey Lewis song about that. It's a great song. I forget what it's called, but yeah, she's not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere.
Cool.
So make the most of it.
Absolutely. Well, man, good luck. And if you are in Iowa and you kill something big, because it'd have to be big for me to drive up 3 hours.
I understand. If you kill something mediocre, don't call me. But if it's over like 160, then I'll call you.
Yeah, you know, if it's a 150-inch 8-pointer, I'd probably come and help you drag it out.
Oh, you're a hell of a guy.
Yeah.
Now this is the question. Is it legal to quarter a white-tailed deer and pack it out of the woods in Iowa?
Ugh. I don't know, but I would assume yes.
See, I don't know either. And I've been Google searching this. There's a bunch of forums, including I think the Iowa Whitetail forum. People were talking about it. And there's a lot of people that say no. There's a lot of people that say yes. There's people that claim they've talked to conservation officers who say, no, it is not legal.
You know
then
what?
There's people who say that it is. So I don't know what the answer is.
I actually think you cannot do it, because I think you need to remove the entire carcass from where you
do you have to remove the entire carcass or only the usable parts of it? Because there's wanton waste laws, right, that say you can't just shoot a deer and cut its head off and take the back straps and see it later.
Right.
But I don't know that it says you must remove the entire carcass from the woods. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, because, I mean, technically, if that's the case, you shouldn't, you know, gut it in the woods.
Right. I mean, what if you just gutted it and cut it in half? What if you just literally chopped the thing in half to lessen the weight, put it on a deer cart, made 2 trips out instead of trying to drag a 200-pound deer by yourself 2 miles. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Well,
I'm going to find out before we talk again. I will find out.
Well, I tell you what, for anybody who's listening to this podcast, there's got to be someone from Iowa listening to this podcast, or a DNR officer in Iowa or somebody, that they need to comment on the Facebook when I post this. Comment whether or not it is illegal or legal to quarter a deer out and bring it back. I mean, I would assume that if it's big enough to shoot, you might be getting it mounted. So you'd want the you'd want the cape.
Yeah, so you would cape half of it, right? And then chop the head off, bring that out, and then take the quarters out.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems reasonable to me. I would even be willing to just cut the dang thing in half so I could take 2 trips.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of 1 trip if I'm by myself.
Yeah.
But I would like to know if it is illegal, I want to know what the actual law says.
Yeah.
Like, not just hearsay. Somebody's got to point me in the direction of the actual regulation and, like, what you could be fined for if they caught you chopping a deer in half and taking it out of the woods.
Right. Well.
And you know the DNR is listening. They listen to all these things because they're trying to They're trying to bust us because we're celebrities. That way they can make a name for themselves. You're not going to bust us, DNR. We're law-abiding hunters.
I think this is a perfect place to stop the podcast.
I agree.
Well, hey, man, good luck this upcoming season. And there is a good chance that you're going to be on the podcast before the season actually even starts.
Fair enough. Good luck. My turkey season, yeah, I'm going to talk to you about shooting turkeys in the head.
There you go. Well, hey, good luck, man, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Justin Czar. So thank him, Mr. Justin Czar. Thank you for hopping on the podcast today. Thanks to all of you for taking time out of your day to download. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you're getting your podcast from. And what that'll do is it'll feed it automatically to you every single time, and you won't have to go out looking for it. So please subscribe to the podcast. Huge shout out to all of the partners of this podcast: Hunter Safety Systems, Lone Wolf, Wasp, Ripcord, Ozonix, and Prime. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast, because they support this podcast and I can continue making content that we all love and enjoy. And other than that, go tell your friends about it. Make sure you're joining me and the Sportsman's Nation on social. Look for Nine Finger Chronicles. Look for Sportsman's Nation on Facebook and Instagram. And our friends at Hunter Safety Systems are reminding us to please wear your damn safety harness. Have a good rest of the week.